cannabis farming in California is moving out of the tree-covered forest into the sunshine of the state's fertile valleys. So we ask, how will legal cannabis be farmed?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1128th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Port Stanley who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Strube on the boards. Jason, is our pre-flight checklist complete?
We are ready to fly high.
We are ready to fly high. Producer Sarah Bell Lynn, is the flight plan filed?
Filed away. Let's go to the Emerald Triangle.
Here we go. Folks, cannabis farming in California is moving out of the disreputable into the acceptable. And so we ask, how will legal cannabis be farmed? Illegal cannabis was grown in secret gardens, wherever those gardens could be kept secret. The essential problem of keeping cannabis gardens secret was as cannabis gardens grow in size, they become easier to see, and therefore more vulnerable to being robbed by thieves and raided by the government. Much of the illicit cannabis technology, then, was focused on getting the most from the least, and that necessity gave rise to Sinsemilla, which is potent strains of cannabis plants that has been refused pollen and therefore produces flowers without seeds. Sinsemilla allowed cannabis farmers to concentrate the amount of THC in each flower and thus raise the price from a couple hundred dollars per pound to a few thousand dollars per pound, and with those kinds of dollars flowing, a lot of people got to growing. Recently, the citizens of California have legalized the medicinal and recreational use of cannabis, at least sort of. The cannabis that was grown in secret gardens is now moving out into the open and will become another of California's many horticultural and agricultural crops. And so we ask, how will California farming professionals grow legal cannabis? Well, to find out, we ask Jeff Brothers, who is the CEO of Harborside Farms. Jeff personifies one of the great ironies of cannabis in our times. He was one of California's premier cut flower producers, but lost that business when the U.S. gave the industry to Colombia, so Colombian farmers would stop growing cannabis. And here he is now, today, one of California's premier cannabis cut flower growers. Wow. Jeff Brothers, welcome to the Food Chain.
It's good to talk to you, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Harborside Farms, you've got 47 acres, a 47-acre farm, which is small by what most people would think is big, but very big, actually.
Yeah, well, if I could, Michael, let me just make a quick correction. I was the CEO of Flourish, which was the holding company vertically integrating Harborside. I resigned from that position in April, and I was coaching them up until recently.
But oh, okay.
I'm no longer officially involved with Harborside Farms. I'm developing a campus that does post-harvest, but very, very, very much involved in the cannabis industry.
Good to go. So, well, you certainly know what's going on then with respect to growing cannabis as a professional, because that's who you are. Tell us a little bit about that irony I brought up where you were, you know, one of the California cut flower industry professionals, and you lost that industry, and now you're right back in it.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent precursor. I had no idea that would lead to being in the cannabis industry and be such a great foundation for the cannabis industry. But, you know, California had, in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties in particular, had a thriving cut flower industry back in the 80s and 90s. And then between the Indian Trade Act and just, you know, environmental and labor regulations just made it so difficult in the high cost of energy. So it's so difficult for the California guys to stay competitive that one by one they just dropped off. I was fortunate enough, I developed the Costco cut flower business and was able to stay, you know, active and productive in the cut flower world a lot longer than some, because I you know, use the South American flowers as well as the California flowers in delivering to Costco. Mm-hmm. But in the end, that even that business was overwhelmed by the Colombians, and I ended up taking about an 8-year hiatus and got into renewable energy.
But so in the interim, what happened?
Infrastructure though still exists in Monterey County. When I first decided that I wanted to enter the industry, I approached Monterey County supervisors and planning staff and leadership and just said, look, if you were to actually dedicate this cut flower infrastructure to cannabis, you would see a rebirth of this industry and an investment go into those old tired greenhouses, and you'd have $1 billion crop at least in Monterey County alone. And it took a while for them to sort of get their head wrapped around it, but they ultimately, you know, went with a 5-0 vote, and they're all in.
Wow. And so you're back, Monterey County, at least at the present time, is back in the business. You had this incredible infrastructure of cut flower greenhouses. You have the environment, which is almost perfect for cut flowers, at least. And so now you're back in business because California legalized medicinal marijuana, and that's where you started, right? Back in growing medicinal marijuana?
Yeah, so a little over 20 years ago, California passed Prop 215, which was the Compassionate Care Act, and it allowed primarily back then for AIDS patients and others that were suffering for medicinal cannabis to be grown and sold. So it was it legalized growing and dispensing of cannabis. It, because it was still federally illegal, it was a tough slog for many of the pioneers that got into it. But over time, it continued to grow and grow and grow. But more recently, the legislature passed MRSA, which was the Medical Marijuana Use Act, and that basically provided a regulatory framework for medicinal cannabis. And then more recently, the voters passed Prop 64, which is the adult use proposition. And that basically kicks into gear January 1 of 2018, allowing like Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, the safe sale in possession of cannabis by all adults in California.
Mm-hmm. Well, as an ag professional, where do you see the difference now between growing medicinal cannabis and growing recreational cannabis? Because I believe they're two different directions, aren't they?
Well, it's a challenge from a regulatory standpoint to sort of decide whether you're going to approve one or the other. That the plant is effectively the same. There's attributes of the plant that will be sort of exploited for more medicinal characteristics or more recreational characteristics. But the plant is essentially the same. The supply chain is essentially the same. What will ultimately end up being different is how the product is taxed at retail. That typically is the difference. If it's for medicinal purposes, they tend to tax it less than for recreational purposes. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, the molecules are effectively the same. And as you stated, and I thought your rather well-written prologue there, the industry, because it was having to live, in the shadows, it was like, they were like bootleggers, and they were creating strains and varieties that were, like moonshine, right? It was very, very strong. But now that the industry is, legalized, you're going to see an awful lot more emphasis on these other cannabinoids within the plant that have other beneficial characteristics other than just getting high, and the quality of the products and the variety of products will explode. And I was a very reluctant convert into the cannabis industry, quite honestly, and only after I learned how many people were helped by it for lots of different reasons, from epilepsy to recovering from cancer or chemo, appetite, anxiety, on and on, PTSD, et cetera, that I became a big fan. And now I think, when you actually have the ability for these breeders to breed some of these other characteristics into the plant, or recapture the ones that used to be there before it sort of got manipulated. I think this plant's a wonderful, fantastic, gift of nature and God, and something that I think people are going to be, very happy to have available to them once they finally drop the stigma.
A quick question before we go to our break. Which do you think will bring the most money to agriculture, recreational cannabis or medicinal cannabis?
Yeah, sadly, there's no competition. We like to call it adult use, but recreational ends up being like a 5-to-1 seller, at least so far in Colorado. So recreational will bring more money to the state.
So that's where the money is, and that's where we will be heading. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking about what the pros are going to do when cannabis becomes street legal to grow and sell, recreational use. We have with us Jeff Brothers, who is a consultant to the industry, from the cut flower industry back into the cut flower industry. 831-479-1080, right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it. Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it. Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it. Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it. Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it. Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it. Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it. Metro Farm it. Now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, What's Eating What? A lot of people are eating cannabis these days. That's right. 40-some percent of the cannabis products are now edibles. Is that true, Jeff?
That is true. And edibles and concentrates are a growing aspect of the industry. The flower sale and the flower consumption is declining. And, I think that's actually a good thing. I think, the tinctures and other ways, the vape pens, et cetera, other ways to consume that aren't quite as invasive or smart.
Good. Now, let me back up a little bit. You've been an ag professional pretty much all of your life, and And now, what are other ag professionals looking at you as? I mean, what are they? How do they see you now that you are pioneering a new industry?
Michael, that's a great question. Recently, I was a panelist at the Western Growers Association annual.
Exactly what I was thinking about.
In Las Vegas, right? And this was very edgy for Western growers to have a cannabis panel, and yet they're interested, right? These people are sort of the cream of the crop of the fresh produce world.
They're the big boys.
They're the big boys
and girls.
And yeah, exactly, men and women, and true professionals, and they take their industry very seriously in food safety, et cetera. But they're curious about cannabis, and they should be, because the dollars are there. I mean, the legal market in California under the medicinal laws and regulations is roughly $3 billion. The overall business in California is something in excess, estimated at over $40 billion, right? So much of it has been illicit. As it becomes regulated and rationalized and legalized and tracked, they expect that legal part with recreational adult use to be somewhere close to $8 to $10 billion. Mm-hmm. There's still an awful lot of it that will exist that they're going to have to try to get their arms around that is illicit. And that's a challenge, but those are still big numbers for agriculture, and so these professionals are quite interested. They've got the smarts and the infrastructure and the teams, until it's completely compliant and rationalized, that I don't think they're going to venture in. But some of them are talking to me already, and they're dipping their toes.
Well. Let me ask you this: how much does an acre of lettuce sell for on the open market?
Yeah, well, lettuce and other crops like that are commodities that can sell from $5 a crate to $40 a crate. So it's kind of a wild ride.
Wild ride. How much does a crate weigh?
I'd say roughly 20 to 30 pounds, depending. But
30 pounds and cannabis on the marketplace right now, gosh, somewhere around $3,000 a pound. So
at retail, yeah.
At retail, so you look at those numbers, and if you're a professional Western growers, you've been growing lettuce, and you're looking at this new market, you got to be scratching your head.
Yeah, no, the numbers are eye-popping, for sure. Now, California is different from other states like Colorado, et cetera, that the Emerald Triangle growers were quite successful in putting caps on the legal marketplace for production. A couple of big growers would be able to supply the entire state's needs if unchecked. And so at this point, you're limited to 1 acre outdoors or up to 4 acres of indoor production, and that's it per company or individual.
Now, that's up in the Emerald Triangle of Humboldt and Mendocino and Trinity counties.
That's statewide.
Statewide. Oh, there's a statewide rule?
As big as Harborside is, can only have up to 4 acres of canopy in total as a company, as a holding company. And so that, that's a very successful cap. You don't see that in Colorado. You don't see that in Washington. So, bigger players, even I think in Massachusetts, there's a farm that's going to be 1 million square feet indoors under one roof. And so those kind of limits are not typical of agriculture, right? That kind of makes the ag people chafe to say that they can only do so much, as opposed to allowing the free market to dictate. But that limit is a 5-year artificial limit, and then it will lift.
Then no holds barred. Let me ask who does rule over California cannabis production now, and how will that work? Who's the sheriff in town?
Yeah, so there's a cannabis czar, a lady by the name of Lori Ajax, and she has sort of oversight over the entire industry. But then they've broken the industry up into three parts. And so cultivators are regulated by the California Department of Food and Ag, mm-hmm. CDFA. And manufacturers are consumer affairs. So it kind of makes sense how they organize it. And Lori, I'll tell you, has done a tremendous job of trying to get a state that had very little regulation in place under Prop 215, and then trying to implement the regulation that was mandated by MRSA, the Medical Marijuana Act. And then all of a sudden, we passed Prop 64, and now we're going to be adult use. And so trying to reconcile the medical and the adult use and make it all come online by 2018 was a Herculean effort. And to have three different branches of government that you're coordinating to try to make this all happen in a state as large as this, with the industry as dynamic as it is, it was quite something. And the fact that the state is going to be more or less ready for business on January 1 is shocking. Now, I think 2018 is going to be a very bumpy year. I don't think the amount of compliance and legality that we expect in the industry, 2-3 years from now, will be in place, right away. There's just an awful lot that has to, sort of shake out. And by law, each locality, municipality, county, can make their own decisions, essentially.
Doesn't that mean that one city can compete with another city for the business, and one county compete with another county? So it sounds like the entire state is going to be competing with itself for the business.
That's a great way to put it. They will be competing with themselves like San Jose has a pro cannabis ordinance, and so there's dispensaries in San Jose. But San Jose is located in the county of Santa Clara. Santa Clara has a prohibition, so you can't grow it in Gilroy, in the greenhouses, etc., in South County of Santa Clara, and sell it to the dispensaries in San Jose, within your county. No, you have to go to Santa Cruz, or you have to go to Monterey, or San Benito is in the midst of trying to decide if they're going to have a pro cannabis ordinance or not. So the state is absolutely balkanized. There's no sort of rhyme or reason to the tax rates or the provisions in each city or county as relates to cannabis. So it's really the wild, wild west right now.
So it's kind of like reefer madness lives on, right?
Yeah, to some degree. Santa Clara County having a ban is crazy. Most of the Central Valley has a ban against cannabis cultivation or dispensing. And yet other areas, like this little town of Hanford, the middle of the Central Valley, is pro-cannabis. Pro-cannabis, right? So some of these communities are saying, gosh, why don't we want to cash in on this? Because, we've got budgets to try to meet. This is a way to collect tax revenue, and yet they'll be surrounded by a county that is anti.
Wow,
it's crazy. And we think it's nuts in Northern California. It's worse than
there. You LA. Go. I was just thinking about LA County or something. When we get back, I'm going to ask you a very tough question, which is: what happens if somebody were to invest all the money in developing the greenhouse structure, infrastructure, and then the feds step in? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Jeff Taylor. He's a longtime consultant to the industry. And what do you think out there? 831-479-1080.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, we are back. You know, in a couple of weeks, folks, recreational use of cannabis will be legal in the state of California. Oh, my goodness. Think of how much money everybody could make selling at $4,000 a pound. And so lots of people are coming to California, building infrastructure, getting ready to get into the business of legal cannabis farming. But wait. According to the federal government, which signed a single convention treaty way back when, cannabis is still class one narcotic. And the feds could march into one of these very fancy greenhouses anytime they want and shut it down. Jeff Taylor, as a consultant to the industry, what do the growers and the investors have to say about that?
Yeah, Michael, Jeff Brothers.
Jeff Brothers, I'm sorry.
He's a good guy. I like Jeff a lot. But, it's a concern, no question about it. Although the rules on civil forfeiture have been sort of put on hold for the time being. Sam Farr and Dana Rohrabach are two congressmen. Sam now retired. We're successfully able to attach an amendment to the Budget Act called the Farr-Rohrabacher Amendment, and that prohibited the DOJ and the DEA from enforcing in legal cannabis states prohibition against cannabis. So you know, that's been a fantastic protection for the industry. That protection elapses in December of this year, and we're hopeful that it'll get extended again. It's been in, one of the few bipartisan efforts that's been successful in Congress of late, so we're hoping that gets extended again. Although that protection is only for medical marijuana, so if you're in an adult use state, you know, there's still a concern that the feds could act. The bizarre thing is, cannabis is on the Schedule One list, and inappropriately so. Heroin and LSD, et cetera, on the Schedule One list, and you can only be Schedule One if there's no medicinal benefits. And I'm not sure there's a soul alive, maybe a few climate deniers or something that would say that cannabis doesn't have medicinal benefits. There's just too much information out there now that proves that cannabis is as medicinal attributes, so it really can't be Schedule One and should be changed. Unfortunately, there's a lawsuit pending in federal court right now by five plaintiffs, ingeniously crafted. The five plaintiffs are, you know, a child with epilepsy, an NFL player with CTE, a soldier with PTSD, etc. Folks like that, and I truly believe that there's a strong chance that gets heard, probably gets appealed all the way to Supreme Court, and I think that could once and for all settle the issue about Schedule One and how allow everybody to breathe easier. But until that happens, we're hoping that the Dana Rohrabacher bill gets attached again, and then you know, like Senator Cory Booker, has got a bill in front of the Senate right now trying to deschedulize cannabis, and there's a lot of efforts out there to try to make it less scary for the folks that want to make investments and legitimize this industry, because it really should be legitimized, and we shouldn't have to worry about the doors being kicked in.
Well, we have what may be a denier on the line. Should we hear what he has to say?
Certainly.
All right, Rory.
Hey,
welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. When it goes to the whole Schedule One question, how do you distinguish non-CBD cannabis from CBD, and that CBD is truly medicinal, you don't get high from it? How are you going to go about that? Because the high THC strains are certainly a drug. There's no question about it. And, you know, in fact, there just was an article, you may have seen it, I can't remember, I think the magazine's called Cannabis, but an 11-month-old kid in Colorado was admitted to an emergency room and died. I don't know if it was cardiac arrest, but somehow the kid ingested too much cannabis and OD'd.
Gummy bears.
No, it wasn't the gummies, but something. They don't know. They're sorting it out. But, you know, this is not an innocuous drug. You know, it's a CBD cannabis for medicinal, not to get high. Okay, you guys call it recreational, but let's be frank. It's just to get high. They're two different animals. So, and then I have another question for you.
Yeah, so to say that CBD, that particular cannabinoid, is medicinal and the THC is not, is a misnomer. I mean, the THC is the psychoactive aspect of the plant, and there's like 400 some odd cannabinoids in the plant. Only about 80 are at all well known, and really about six are known extensively. CBD and THC being the two that are known the best. CBD is anti-inflammatory and has very distinct medicinal benefits. But THC, even though it's psychoactive, has medicinal benefits, and the two acting in concert are quite good. So if you struggle with sleep like so many people do, a straight CBD only is not going to help you sleep. If you struggle with PTSD like so many people do, straight CBD is not going to be the answer. If you're an athlete and you want to recover from extreme sports and you want anti-inflammatory, CBD is going to help. If you're epileptic, high CBD is really going to help. But there's so many benefits of this plant that aren't just strictly CBD alone.
I know, first.
I wouldn't say that, just because THC is psychoactive that, it can't be useful
right.
With the plant.
But I know firsthand, Jeff, that it enhances your appetite. I mean, I had a hungry friend one night who had the munchies, and he was bugging me for food. I went in, I found in the fridge a can of cat food, tuna. I put it on crackers. He ate it and asked me if it was cold bean dip. So I know all about the appetite-enhancing qualities of fine meat. But anyway, when I told him what I did, he chased me.
For the folks that are suffering from radiation and chemo, et cetera, that appetite enhancement is quite valuable. So you
yeah.
want to take that away from that.
Right. So how do you separate that, the medicinal use, from an adult? And how do you separate that from another, just a greater opportunity for young people, i.e. teenagers, to get their hands on the weed? Not that it wasn't hard for me 40 years ago.
Right.
I can't imagine it's super difficult, but if you open the floodgates and just have this stuff floating around all over the place, I mean, it's damning to young people.
Yeah, well,
I mean, damning.
If you look at Colorado as a great case study, and I think California did it right. California, even though it led with Prop 215 way back when, it didn't rush into the legal adult use cannabis world. It allowed for some smaller states to be case studies and then sort of look and learn from those experiences. And in Colorado, actual teen use is down. Compared to what it was prior to the adult use
Can I put you gentlemen on hold? Take a quick break, and I'll pick you both up when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Do stay tuned. We will be right back with Rory and with Jeff Brothers and with you, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us if you wish. Wondering if Rory knows any people in agriculture who are talking about this. Right back.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freeze. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to KnoxGardenBox.com. That's K-N-O-X, GardenBox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. Rory, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Quick question for you, Rory. You're an ag professional. You go from farm to farm to farm in the Pajaro Salinas Valleys up and down California. Are farmers talking about this?
You know, some you hear talk. You see pot grows going on in old that were once dilapidated greenhouse, or they have somebody come in and build a state-of-the-art greenhouse on existing footprint. So you see it. The people I work with, not so much. They've got their eyes focused on surviving in the berry market. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, once these things come online, the price is going to drop. It's going to get more competitive. And I wanted to ask Jeff. I'd heard earlier last week, Michael, somebody said that Monterey County was charging a $15 a square foot tax on operations. Was that per square foot or per thousand square feet? It just sounded really high.
Jeff?
No pun intended, of course.
Thanks for the call.
Yes, no, I got another question.
Oh, okay.
It is $15 a foot.
$15 a square foot?
Per square foot for a canopy, right? So a 40,000 square foot greenhouse might have 30,000 square foot of canopy. It's a very high figure. And when Monterey County adopted its ordinance, is one of the first in the state to adopt an ordinance, and it didn't have much of a benchmark to work from, so it used a consultant. The same consultant was working with, you know, King City and Greenfield and Gonzales and San Luis Obispo and several other communities. They overshot, and I think the county realizes they overshot. Again, they didn't have much information to work from, so they're considering dropping that, but it is a very, very, very high figure, and will potentially put Monterey County at a disadvantage to other counties. Like San Benito, if they adopt an ordinance, is going to adopt one that's much lower. Sonoma is much lower, et cetera.
Well, that means we're going back to that competition, you know, where county against county, city against city, state against state. It's going to get wild, wild west out there. You had another question, Rory. Go ahead.
Yeah, so main question I had, who's monitoring from the county ag department up to the Department of Pesticide Registration, DPR, who's monitoring chemical use on cannabis? The question is, I mean, I know there's problems. They've got problems with two-spotted spider mite, among others. And unless you're using an aggressive beneficial, augmentative beneficial release, the mites will kill you, just like they do in the berries. So who's monitoring?
Right.
Do the end users know that they're spraying chemicals off-label on this crop? There's no label for cannabis.
Good.
So how can anybody use, whether it's a fungicide, insecticide, or a carricide, on these plants? And do the potheads that end up with this product, you know, they're ingesting, you know, chemicals that are probably, there's probably residues on those buds.
Good question, Rory. Thank you very much. Jeff?
So yeah, Rory, you're hitting on one of the most topical issues in the industry right now. And the state, it was largely unregulated before, obviously, and with all that happening in the illicit market. Pesticide-free cannabis is the watchword of the day.
And, organic. Is there such a thing as organic pot? Well, organic cannabis
is a federal designation, and because we're still federally illegal, we can't use organic as a term. But there are professionals out there right now, Rory, doing exactly what you would expect them to be doing, and coaching and advising these growers as to how to do it, where they'll end up pesticide free. IPM, Integrated Pest Management Services, are in high demand. They are using a lot of these, beneficial insects, et cetera. The Department of Pesticide Regulation is working aggressively with the industry to try to figure out what compounds, et cetera, can be used. Essentially, right now, as you said, there's very few things there's virtually nothing that's it's got a cannabis label. But there are other things like tobacco that uses things that ultimately are smoked, and so they're trying to figure out how to guide the industry without being too restrictive, but also not being too lenient and solve for this problem. It's a big deal. I think one of the things, that's so great about the community that you live and work in, and the professionals that are in this this valley, or these two valleys, these are some of the best agricultural minds on the planet, and they're coming to bear on this issue. And I believe Monterey County, Santa Cruz counties will produce the highest grade pesticide free product around, because of this infrastructure here, and that'll be better for the consumers, because in the end they were smoking a lot of stuff they had no idea how it was being treated. And the more this gets certified and regulated and monitored, the better off we are. Mandatory testing was not a requirement before. With regulation, mandatory testing is. And this campus that I'm building in Salinas right now is trying to rationalize the supply chain that you're used to, that just doesn't exist in this industry. And so it has,
Jeff, you talk
packaging, lab testing, distribution, extraction, et cetera. All these things that the farmers are going to need can come to one campus and be done in a responsible, efficient way. And that's kind of a
thank you, guys.
Thing we're creating.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Roy. Jeff, you talked about all of the professionals coming to bear on a plant that has been refined and nurtured by black market growers up in the hills. And I think about the 400 cannabinoids that are in this plant. We don't know much about most all of them, know a little bit about a couple of them. What's going to happen when the pros take on those 400 cannabinoids? What is the industry going to look like in 10 years? This is the Food Chain Right Back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com. 2x2. They say we spend $25 billion a year sweating it out at the gym. Sweat contains some of the essential nutrients your body needs to grow strong and stay healthy. If you sweat these nutrients out and fail to replace them, your body will begin breaking down. Some say you can get all 90 of the essential nutrients from the foods you eat. Maybe, but if you eat foods from farmed-out soils or foods that have had the life processed out of them, you will deprive your body of some essential nutrients. You can get all 90 of the essential nutrients your body needs for less than a daily latte with a 90 for Life Healthy Start Pack. It's easy, it's delicious, and they are essential.
Get all 90 of the essential nutrients your body needs to grow strong and stay healthy with a 90 for Life Healthy Start Pack at NutrientsToGo.com. That's NutrientsToGo.com. Get all 90 of the essential nutrients your body needs for less than the cost of a daily latte at NutrientsToGo.com. That's NutrientsToGo.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Back there in 1937 or so, the government got very frightened of this cannabis plant. They called it marijuana, and they called it all kinds of things, reefer, whatnot. And so they prohibited it, and they signed a convention in the 1960s, I believe, single convention treaty, forever forbidding cannabis, classifying it as a class one narcotic. The net effect of that prohibition was that it served to provide an income for a bunch of people, like those who live up in California's Emerald Triangle, because it made cannabis worth growing. And since it made cannabis worth growing, growers grew a lot of it, and they became very good at concentrating the amount of THC they got in the flowers of the cannabis plant. So now those plants are moving down to the sunshine of California's great central valleys, and we have this incredible infrastructure in California. Here in the Pajaro and the Salinas Valley, some of the most productive agricultural land in the world, if not the universe, but who knows about that. And so what is going to happen, you know, when this plant with 400 cannabinoids, 400 different chemicals, and we know a little bit about THC and CBD, but we know almost nothing about the rest. Jeff Taylor, Jeff Brothers, I made that mistake twice. Jeff Brothers, what do you think? What do you see in the future here for that plant and this this state?
It's super exciting, Michael, because they didn't study until recently what they call the endocannabinoid system, and it's a system that exists in your body, and it permeates throughout the entire human body and most animals. And the role of the endocannabinoid system is to maintain homeostasis, right, to try to get you to, you know, optimal health, and cannabis. And those cannabinoids in cannabis are some of the best at matching up what the body needs and meeting what the body needs. And so the relationship between cannabis and the human body is profound. Sadly, in logically, because of prohibition, you know, the plant got manipulated and sort of geared towards, you know, maximum effect for the high, But these other cannabinoids are going to be exploited. And you know, like Rory was saying about, oh, it just gives you the munchies. Well, you know, there's likely a cannabinoid in there that does the exact opposite of that, that actually turns off your hunger pangs. And how interesting would it be if you could just, you know, take an edible cannabis and it's very gentle on your system, and all of a sudden you lost appetite. The fastest growing demographic in the cannabis world right now is seniors, believe it or not. And so seniors are finding that, you know, this is a superior plant and approach towards, you know, pain and arthritis and sleep issues and they're getting off of many of these drugs they've been put on, and they're, you know, quality of life is improving, and how many of these things can be targeted for conditions that they have, whether that's, you know, potential early onset Alzheimer's and some of these other things that they've been shown to have effect on.
Brave new world.
It's very, very, very exciting.
Jeff Brothers, thank you so much for joining us. How do people get in touch with you, Jeff?
So probably the best would be jeff.brothers@plantcentral.com.
There you go. And thank you for tuning in. Next up on the series, we're going up to the Emerald Triangle, find out what happens when it becomes legal and all those people lose their source of income. Right back. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.